We were talking a while back about making decisions, and we also then started talking about how to make good choices in the person that you marry. And so I would like to continue that idea and continue the discussion of it. And I couldn't quite remember where I left off, so I'm going to picked a point where I think it would be a good spot to start back over. If some of this review, I apologize, but we're going to start from here. In any marriage, you're going to expect conflict. You have two people that are raised from different environments, different households, different ways of doing things, and there are going to be bad times. There are going to be difficulties. There's going to be hardships. And it's really optimism. It's hope that pulls people through. In Proverbs chapter 18, Proverbs 18 and verse 14, the spirit of a man can endure his sickness, but as for a broken spirit, who can bear it? And so, if we got a lot of worries, they're going to consume a person. And it's going to keep them a lot of times from making any moves. I see this a lot of times where people are fearful, they're concerned, and they lock up because they don't know what the right choice is. In Philippians chapter 4. Philippians chapter 4 and starting at verse 4. Rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I say rejoice. Let your gentle spirit be known to all men. The Lord is near. Be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God, and the peace of God, which surpasses all comprehension, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. And so one of the things that when Paul talks about love in 1 Corinthians 13, is in that list of descriptions of love, he says, love always hopes. Love tends to be optimistic. Yes, things are bad now, but they can get better. Now think about that. If you're looking for someone to marry, you don't want to marry somebody who's doom and gloom. You need to find somebody who appreciates things, who sees that things can get better. In Colossians chapter 3. Colossians chapter 3 and in verse 15. Let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, to which indeed you are called in one body, and be thankful. Let the word of Christ richly dwell within you with all wisdom, teaching and admonishing one another with psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing with thankfulness in your hearts to God. Whatever you do, in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks through him to God the Father. We have to be thankful people. And again, you would want somebody who appreciates things. It makes life so much easier. You also need to start thinking about whether a person is sober. Moses warned in Deuteronomy 29 about not fooling yourself. In Deuteronomy 29 and in verse 18. He says, so that there be not among you a man or woman or family or tribe whose heart turns away from the Lord our God to go and serve the gods of those nations, that there will be not among you a root bearing poisonous fruit or wormwood. It shall be when he hears the words of this curse, he will boast, saying, I have peace, though I walk in the stubbornness of my heart, in order to destroy the watered land with the dry. The Lord will never forgive him. I think I got the wrong verse. I got the wrong verse down here. I have to come back to that one. I went and checked that twice. I hate that when that happens. And I can't think of what the right one was. Okay. Let's go over to Titus. In Titus chapter 2, and in verse 2, Titus 2 and verse 2, it says, older men are to be temperate, dignified, sensible, sound in faith, in love, and in perseverance. One of the fine qualities in men is soberness, temperance in the thing. It is something that you should look for in a mate. Does he have sound reasoning? Is he sober-minded? Not only in the way he thinks and deals with, but you don't want somebody who gets drunk or somebody that does drugs. Those sorts of things end up leading to violence. Take a look at Proverbs 20. Proverbs 20 and verse 1. Wine is a mocker, strong drink a brawler, and whoever is intoxicated by it is not wise. Things like alcohol, drugs, they consume a lot of money. People spend money, and because they're not sober, not thinking in the right mind, they tend to spend extra money on their, not only their drugs, but on other things. And so it's not unusual for somebody who's an addict to be in poverty. Take a look at Proverbs 21, verse 17. He who loves pleasure will become a poor man. He who loves wine and oil will not become rich. People do all sorts of things that they later regret when they're not sober. So think about the person that you want to marry. Do you want somebody who's not going to make good decisions? Who's addicted to whatever? They will not make good spouses. There'll always come a time when there are problems. And marriage is hard enough as it is. You also want a person who's responsible. Have you ever seen a person who plays the role of a victim? We got a society full of those type of people today. Nothing is ever their fault. Nothing gets fixed because they're certain that they have no involvement in the cause of whatever the problem is. Good spouses are strong and they're brave. Take a look at 1 Corinthians chapter 16. 1 Corinthians 16 and verse 13. Be on the alert, stand firm in the faith, act like men, be strong. It's the same thing that makes Christians good spouses. Take a look at Titus chapter 3. In verse 14, Titus chapter 3, and in verse 14, our people must also learn to engage in good deeds to meet pressing needs so that they will not be unfruitful. We have to face the difficulties in life and still be productive. There's obligations when you're in a marriage, obligations to your family. For instance, in 1 Timothy chapter 5 and in verse 8. But if anyone does not provide for his own, especially those of his own household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. I'm surprised how many times I get notes from people and they got a boyfriend or a girlfriend, usually a boyfriend. Hasn't held down a job in 2 years. He lives in his parents' basement. And yet somehow, this is going to be the perfect mate. How they're going to be responsible. How do they demonstrate responsibility? Being married means taking on many responsibilities. Eventually, there's going to be kids. You're responsible for them. You're responsible for the things that you buy. You're responsible for your spouse. You don't want someone who looks for ways to get out of their duties. You want somebody who's eager to do things and willing to admit, I need to be responsible for this. You need to look for somebody who loves other people. In fact, one of the attributes of the excellent wife that's in Proverbs 31, look down in verse 20. Proverbs chapter 31, and look at verse 20. She extends her hand to the poor. She stretches out her hands to the needy. Generosity to those who are less fortunate is a good attribute in a spouse. Far too many people are possessive about their love. They act like there's a limited amount of it and they can't share it with anybody else without limiting their own love. But love has no upper limits. Take a look at Philippians chapter 1. Philippians chapter 1 and look at verse 9. Philippians 1 verse 9 says, and this I pray, that your love may abound still more and more in real knowledge and in discernment. Love needs to abound. It needs to grow. It shouldn't be stifled and limited. And in 1 Thessalonians chapter 3, look at verse 12. And may the Lord cause you to increase and abound in love for one another and for all people, just as we also do for you. The reason it's important is some people tend towards jealousy. They can't share what they have for fearing that they're going to end up with less. But love's one of those things that you share with other people and you end up with more. You don't end up with less love or less attention when you involve other people. And you want somebody who's caring about other people. Someone who loves others is going to have room to love children when they come along. They're going to love strangers because they're just naturally hospitable. That's a good spouse. Now, in that love, of course, you would hope that if you're dating somebody and you're planning to marry them, the person you're marrying is going to love you. You would think it should go without saying. Marry somebody who loves you. But a great deal of problems come from not knowing what love is. Too many things are called love, but they really aren't love. Go back to 1 Corinthians. We've been referring to this throughout this lesson. But 1 Corinthians 13 and verse 4 says, love is patient, love is kind, and is not jealous. Love does not brag and is not arrogant, does not act unbecomingly. It does not seek its own. It's not provoked. It does not take an account of wrong suffered. Does not rejoice in unrighteousness, but rejoices with the truth. Bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never fails. And think about what that's describing. It's not describing fluttering butterflies in your stomach. It's not describing panting after somebody because you're sexually aroused. Love is described as a choice to take care of and want another person. To give of yourself. Love then is shown in how you treat the other person. Take a look at Ephesians chapter 5. Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 25. Husbands, love your wives just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself up for her, so that he might sanctify her, having cleansed her by the washing of water with the word, that he might present to himself the church in all her glory, having no spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that she should be holy and blameless. So husbands ought also to love their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his own wife loves himself. For no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes it and cherishes it, just as Christ also does the church. And down in verse 33, it says, nevertheless, each individual among you also is to love his own wife, even as himself. And the wife must see to it that she respects her husband. And then think about it. Is there a demonstration of love? Do they treat you like they love themselves? Are they interested in nourishing, cherishing you? For the woman, is she giving respect? Or does he sometimes treat you like trash? If you see problems while you're dating, those problems aren't going to go away when you get married. See, one of the aspects of love is a staying power. Love lasts. That's probably one of the more difficult things. It's one of the reasons why generally we suggest people have a period of engagement, to see if it's going to last. Because when you're in the middle of the excitement, it looks like, hey, everything's going to go really great. But love lasts. Take a look at Song of Solomon. Song of Solomon in chapter 8 and starting at verse 6. Put me like a seal over your heart, like a seal on your arm, for love is as strong as death. Jealousy as severe as shield. It flashes are the flashes of fire, the very flame of the Lord. Many waters cannot quench love, nor will rivers overflow it. If a man were to give all the riches of his house for love, it would be utterly despised. That type of love doesn't come and go. It doesn't matter what the problems are, it's going to hang on. So, putting the things that we've talked about together, what should a woman look for in a husband? Well, one thing you want to look for is a leader. The man you pick for your husband is the one you're choosing to lead your household. Now, just as when the church looks for elders, they're looking for people who rule well, a woman should look at for the beginnings of those qualities in a man. Take a look at 1 Timothy. Chapter 3, it's the qualification for elders, older men. But the start, the seed of that there should be in younger men as well. In 1 Timothy chapter 3, and starting at verse 2. 1 Timothy chapter 3, starting at verse 2. An overseer then must be above reproach, the husband of one wife, temperate, prudent, respectable, hospitable, able to teach, not addicted to wine or pugnacious, but gentle, peaceable, free from the love of money. He must be one who manages his own household well, keeping his children under control with all dignity. But if a man does not know how to manage his own household, how will he take care of the church of God? These are the qualities that young men should be developing so that when they become older men, they can lead the church. But in the meantime, young woman, you're looking for someone to lead a home. Now, leadership is not about demanding to make every decision. We look at the qualities of that worthy woman back in Proverbs chapter 31. Proverbs 31 and looking at verse 28. earlier, she makes a lot of decisions. She just she chooses what kind of career she's going to have, the products that she's going to produce. She uses the profits to buy a vineyard. She decides what to plant there. And later on in verse 28, when she gets older, it says, her children rise up and bless her. Her husband also saying, he praises her, saying, many daughters have done nobly, but you excel them all. Charm is deceitful, beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised. Give her the products of her hands, and let her works praise her in the gates. A man needs to know that his wife's going to make decisions, and she should be good at that. Someone who won't let you make choices is not going to make a good husband. Leadership is about giving general direction, guidance. It's about going first and asking other people to follow your lead. Now, along with that, a woman should be looking for a provider. Christians know the value of work. In 1 Thessalonians chapter 3, 1 Thessalonians chapter 3 and verse 10. As we night and day kept praying most earnestly, Second Thessalonians. Dropped a letter. 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, verse 10. For even when we were with you, we used to give you this order. If anyone is not willing to work, he's not to eat it either. If you have somebody who can't hold down a job, we talked about that earlier. You know, a person who spends most of the time out of work than in it is not going to be able to support a family. You know, I used to be a manager long time ago. And one of the things as a manager I was taught to do, and what I did, you know, I needed somebody to fill a position. I would go through the resumes. And I would start sorting. First sort was to go through all the resumes and say, okay, does they at least have the qualifications I need? Then I would go sort through it again, but I would look at their job history. A person who bounces from job to job or who has long gaps of unemployment isn't going to make a good employee. And guess what? They also make miserable providers for a family. Here's an actual case that I had. Okay, my fiance and I have been living together for almost 6 months now. We're not married, but for a while I let myself get away from God, and I didn't care if we were living together or married. I'm trying to get closer to God and receive forgiveness for my sins. I know the scriptures quite well and what it teaches about fornication. We're living in sin, and I cannot ask God for forgiveness unless I turn away from my sins. That would obviously mean that we would have to get married. The only problem is he doesn't want to get married right now. It's not that he's not ready. It's just he's scared his dad will take him off medical insurance and auto insurance and his phone bill. I know he has to get his monthly medications, but he has a good job, and his doctor even told him not to worry about it, that he'll get his medications with no problems. So I'm confused and worried and hurt. God told me plain as day that I cannot continue living a sinful life. She should have never gotten this position in the first place. But my reply was, do you realize something? Your boyfriend is putting money before you and God. As you pointed out, it isn't that he can't afford insurance and medications. It's just that once he marries, mom and dad aren't going to cover some of his bills any longer. And that is more important to him than marriage to you. And this guy is the guy you want to marry and raise your children? It's guys like him who give Christianity a bad name. He's claiming to be something he isn't living. The standard word for that is hypocrisy. He's just playing at being a Christian, just as he's playing at being married. And I hope she thought about that. A person who thinks too much about money is not going to be a good provider. because he's reluctant to spend money when it's needed. Then there's an aspect of security. Ladies, you want a man who is willing to give his life for you. That's what we read in Ephesians 5, verse 25. Christ gave his life for the church. Husbands are to love their wives in the same way. If his goals and his desires always come first, then he isn't good husband material. A wife needs an environment where she can focus on her duties in the home and trust her husband is handling the outside world, especially when the children are small. So what should a husband, a man, look for in a wife? First off, he needs someone who's nurturing. Most marriages end up with children. It's just kind of the natural consequence of things. So in Psalms 127, and in verse 3, it says, "Behold, children are a gift of the Lord. The fruit of the womb is a reward. Like arrows in the hands of a warrior, so are children of one's youth. How blessed is a man whose quiver is full of them. They will not be ashamed when they speak with their enemies in the gate." So if you're looking for children, which a lot of people when they're getting married are considering that, then wouldn't it make sense to find a wife who loves children? Look at Titus chapter 2. Titus chapter 2 and in verse 4. "So that it may encourage young women to love their husbands and to love their children." Now, another thing that you would be wanting in a wife is someone who has a quiet spirit. Take a look at 1 Peter chapter 3. And starting in verse 3, "Your adornment must not merely be the external, braiding the hair, the wearing of gold jewelry, or putting on dresses, but let it be the hidden person of the heart, with the imperishable quality of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is precious in the sight of the Lord." Quiet spirit makes a quiet home, a place of refuge, a place that is fun to go back to. And what most young men make the mistake of is they look for the external. They talk about, I can't tell you how many young men I've talked to about their girlfriend. "What attracted you to her?" "Oh, she looks hot." Okay. But what about her character? What about her qualities? And it takes a while before you get thinking, "Oh yeah, I need to think about that." Take a look at Proverbs 31 again. Proverbs 31 and in verse 30. "Charm is deceitful and beauty is vain. But a woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised." Those charm and beauty, they don't last. We get old. Character, though, doesn't get old. It gets better. In fact, it's Christians who make the best spouse. So many problems could be avoided when you get two people who share the same faith working together. Go back to 1 Peter chapter 3. 1 Peter chapter 3. And look at verse 7. "You husbands, in the same way, live with your wives in an understanding way, as with someone weaker, since she is a woman, and show her honor as your fellow heir of grace of life, so that your prayers will not be hindered." Your wife and your husband should be fellow heirs, both heading to heaven. You have the same goals. You have the same ideas about how things need to work. Here's again another actual problem I had to deal with a while back. I attend Church of Christ, but my fiance practices Calvinism. Every time we try to talk about the Bible and God, we argue because we're so into our religion. How is it possible to talk to someone about things of the sort when they always have an answer, but they take the verse out of context? They pretty much write their own Bible. How do I go about helping him without bringing myself down in the process? Any help and suggestions would be appreciated. My reply was, I need you to think long and hard about the following because it's truth that's hard to face. You're planning to marry a person to whom you cannot come to an agreement about religion. What are you going to do after you get married? Don't deceive yourself with the line that you'll change him after you're married. If he isn't interested in the truth now, when he's strongly motivated to win you as a wife, why would you expect it to change once he has you, has what he wants? What belief system will your children be raised in? The fact is that children raised in an environment where two parents have different beliefs generally grow up with no beliefs of their own. They see their parents constantly arguing and contradicting each other and decide they want nothing to do with religion. Is that what you want for the future of your children? When you're picking out somebody to marry, it sounds like, well, fine, I'll go to my church now and she can go to her church and we'll get along. But then when the kids come along, oh, you can't avoid that. Because then there's going to be the arguments about, well, I want them to be raised this way, and she wants them raised that way. Find somebody that believes like you. Find a Christian. And I know it's tough. It's difficult. I get notes by that all the time, and I keep trying to figure out some way to solve that problem. I have no solution. It's just tough to find. But find a Christian. And when you consider someone for marriage, look at who they are and not who you hope they will become. So many people marry their hopes instead of the person in front of them. And then they're dismayed to find out they got the person in front of them. Yes, people do change. That's what Christianity is about. But look for the changed person, not the dream person. See, you're deciding for who you're going to marry for the rest of your life. It's going to impact your future happiness. It's going to may impact your salvation. It's an important decision. And those decisions can be made not just by external looks, quick checklists. Look at the character of the person. Is it a character that you want to spend the rest of your life with? I hope you'll think about these things. If there's anyone here who's not yet a child of God, there is no better time than right now to put on Christ. For those who are children of God and would like the prayers of your brethren in behalf, why don't you come forward as we stand and sing the song we selected.